Henry Lord and James Baldwin, you know, they're great writers, but to go in sort of a different direction, I live in New Hampshire, and our governor is worth about $300 million. He had a company right next to Tyco's North American headquarters, which was in New Hampshire. So his party pals were guys like Dennis Kozlowski, who stole $600 million. And I lived there for a few years, and there's quite a prostitution ring going on. It's probably nothing like what Henry Kissinger must be used to, but I'll spill the beans sometime if anybody wants to hear about it.
And about the prostitution ring?
Yeah, it's a big can of worms.
Okay.
I'll just throw that out there.
Oh.
It's taking it in a different direction, but it has to do with gender, sex, and power.
I mean, prostitution's been going on since the get-go, so it probably got everything to do with gender, sex, and power. Any exchange of money has to do with power.
In the post-9/11 world, you know, Shauna Levy is still dead, and she was poking her nose around and those kind of things, so I think it's pretty relevant.
Okay, what do you all think? Should we field some more conversation first, maybe, and maybe we can get back to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I see a hand over
there. Yeah. Going back, kind of meshing what both Hilden and Eli were saying with the definition that was given this morning about how are we creating power, and it was like Foucault and talking about dividing practices and creating categories for people. And once you create these categories, then people are internalizing difference, and you know, which kind of turns into hierarchy, even if it seems like efficient, you know, things are separated. And so it seems really easy for us to look at that with work and with power and politics and say, oh, well, we don't want to create those categories. And yet, you know, with sexuality, obviously we're dealing with those categories. And so I think that we're looking to abolish those categories in a lot of ways. And so I can totally see where you're coming from. That in maybe we are moving towards a fluid sexuality. And I feel that in my own life, I have tried not to define anything. And it's like you come up against these barriers. And with relationships as well, you know, like monogamous open relationships and like, if you just try to, like, that seems to be the ultimate freedom, is just to pick who, when, where, why, whenever, as you go. But that's very challenging. And I think that, I don't know, but I just want to bring up those points in reference to what you were asking. Like, it does seem an ideal, and yet could be negating for people who find a lot of meaning in creating and identifying with a category.
This is like kind of unrelated to things that have been said so far, but I wanted to throw it out because it's something I've experienced a lot and I see a lot, is that in radical subculture, in like anti-capitalist, anti-consumerism kind of community, femme identities get really pushed under a lot, and like obviously, like I lived in Richmond, Virginia, and presented as femme, and people, like, I couldn't, like, I didn't have, like, an entrance into, like, the radical community. Like, I was someone's partner. I wasn't, like, someone as myself, and, like, you know, I was obviously frivolous, and I obviously spent too much money and was playing into capitalism because I presented in this, like, more femme way, and I, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, there are plenty of femme people. But that just meant their hair was long with their work pants and white t-shirts. And like, I don't know, so that's something like that I haven't heard and like that I really think. I think I really enjoy being in Boston because we do have a lot of people doing radical queer group, radical queer work, and who are femme identified, and it's really neat, but it's not everywhere.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's really, I wanted to go back to actually your thing about the ideal, sort of, and then go back to that too, to speak to both of them. I often kind of negotiate with that and that the ideal, and I'm not really comfortable with that. I'm really not comfortable applying that to somebody else and saying, you know, open, non-monogamous, like, free love thing, that's the ideal, and if you're not living that, then somehow you're screwed up or you have some false consciousness or something. I mean, really, it always just comes that into that individual identity and whether or not, how kind of honest you feel with yourself, I don't know, and your surroundings. But yeah, no, so I don't really agree with any ideal or goal as, like, you know, the perfect relationship or the perfect way to perceive interactions and relationships.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to say that that's the ideal, but the freedom for people to have that fluidity, give ourselves the freedom to have that fluidity and give other people the freedom to have that fluidity would be the ideal. Not to actually live that fluidity, but to have that option.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, that would be ultimate freedom. That would be ultimate expression of what you think, want, and feel at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to respond. But then, yeah, that's interesting. And I imagine, yeah, that does exist. And it is, yeah, frustrating, that negotiation. And all those assumptions that come with groups and people in groups. And, yeah, when you present as something. And the resistance to that, yeah, and the assumptions then that that's attached with something, i.e. capitalism.
Okay, see some hands. I just wanted to say that one thing about hierarchy, I think anywhere that hierarchy comes in where in place of respect is where compassion's lacking for the idea of why someone might identify. And that's a really essential component in my mind of creating a change in the world is compassion without setting up a continued hierarchy. And as I just wanted to also say for the femme thing, I think it's really interesting because on the West Coast, I lived on the West Coast of the United States for a long time, and there I found that the femme scene was really big, especially like in Olympia, Washington, where I live, where Riot Girl is still banging, you know? And and it was awesome, and I think that for me, what I was talking about my gender politics, it's come out of being surrounded by a lot of femmes who feel really bold and straightforward about their identity, and I'm starting to realize that I don't have any title in it, and where do I go? But, you know, I'm not trying to diss on femme identity at all, so just, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm accusing anybody of... I'm fully supportive on that one. Okay, I see three hands. You're for them, okay? So, go ahead.
Yeah, mine was kind of a direct response, just because... As like a long-haired anti-capitalist anarchist person, I've often been discounted, and people assume that because I have longer hair, I must not be challenging the system in some way. I don't identify as femme at all. Like, makeup and all that stuff is not really my thing, but I just found it so strange where when you go in the business world, the capitalist world, women have to dress up as men and wear suits and try and act very professional and manly. And then you go into the anti-capitalist world and you have to also cut all your hair off and act real tough and act real serious all the time. And I just find those really odd, these total worlds that are trying to be opposites, or not trying, but, you know, are supposedly at opposition with each other. Having that, in common is so odd. So I like that you raised that.
I appreciate that too, just because this is a gender and sexuality discussion, and I mean, the whole flamboyant gay thing is live. That is going on. That is totally, like, getting dressed up, that is totally part of it. And that's why it's frustrating that the fashion thing, I'm not saying that that's like the whole identity of it, but it is performance. And that's all that we can, you know, that's what it comes down to often. And it's frustrating that the fashion, and that Tara isn't here, because Tara's a total expert on fashion within any scenes, but especially an advocate for queer dress and dress codes and fucking those up, basically. And definitely, unfortunately I have to have my boyfriends do my makeup for me, but you know, someday I'll learn. Leila, did you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think it ties in a lot to what Kaz was saying, how there's a lot of judgment, like, that we have to have this revolutionary discipline and become, like, very serious, and I think that's really old. Like, where it's, like, you know, like, in communism or socialism, where it's, like, being gay is very bourgeois, and then that still ties in now, where, if, like, if you're femmy, or, like, if you dress in, like, fancy girly clothes, or you, like, style,
that's seen as being like very luxurious and decadent, and like you need to be an anti-consumer and like wear Carhartts and a black shirt, and you know what I mean. So I just think it's like kind of got a history.
Carhartts is a brand name. Just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, and actually, you know, like that.
Any more questions? Oh yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on what you were talking about more fluid, open relationships, and how at the same time as those things are often very healthy, a lot of people enter into that as a way of avoiding dealing with power dynamics within relationships. So like even like if it's more fluid, but then you have the idea that you can have multiple partners that you cared about, and then you get into like priority of partner and like all kinds of other issues, or even with a single monogamous partner, it's hard to deal with like different power dynamics or different class backgrounds or whatever. And it seems like it's really easy to kind of adopt a more fluid idea of sexuality as opposed to being with one particular person or like several people over like a long period of time. And like really dealing with those kind of issues, so I see possibilities for it. But the same way, I see a lot of people doing that because they're not able to function in a solid relationship with one person over a long period of time. So,
I think that's a really good conversation for outside of this circle.
Yeah. so I came in.
It's okay. Feel like we're going to get really personal about relationship, and I don't know if I want to do that right now. That's okay.
I'm just thinking about when y'all were talking about linkages, because I think it's kind of interesting, particularly looking at how, not only in the queer communities, but in many communities, what's happening is, you know, people are coming together out of a shared identity, out of a desire for solidarity and safety and all of those things. And then there seems to be a choice about what you do with that grouping, whether it's to try and assimilate into the dominant culture, which many groups, particularly, you know, in all sorts of sort of oppressive single-issue groups have taken their, you know, objective as trying to figure out a way to assimilate. Or the other option is, aside from just sort of staying in your own little island of identity, trying to then make linkages with other groups that are experiencing oppression. But I think it's interesting when you're talking about sort of fluidity of self and trying to sort of bring in the whole self, because when you're making those linkages, the linkages you're making are not linkages based on your whole self, but linkages based on one particular aspect of yourself that has given you entree to your particular community, and the one particular aspect of the other communities, you know, the aspect that's given them sort of a sense or a shared experience of oppression. So in many ways, these linkages are based on people's, not people's sense of, sort of a fluid, larger whole self, but oftentimes of sort of fragmented pieces, mm-hmm. and how that sort of plays into more of a humanitarian, like a project of creating a real humanitarian movement that's based on people bringing their whole selves into a larger movement.
Awesome. I personally don't real. I think the concept of assimilation has been taken a little bit too far within activists, especially groups. Assimilation, I mean, when the goal is to change society, isn't the goal to all assimilate towards each other? I don't really understand the idea of, I mean, we're not going to assimilate into George Bush. You can't. And he's not the only person that you don't agree with. I mean, we're assimilating towards each other. I feel like that's a goal. And I would say that the idea that assimilation is a downfall sort of isn't really examining the intention, mm-hmm. In my opinion. So I guess I don't know. I don't know. That's anything that helps, but what you said I think was helpful because because of that.
I wanted to just talk about what you said. What's your name?
Lilia.
What Lilia said about this whole thing about how we have to, as women, somehow take on masculine think, because, okay, for me, it's funny, I've been trying to be a little more feminine, so I've been growing my hair long, and a friend, like, whatever, it's all about hair, a friend of mine said, you know, you're not looking very femme lately, you stopped wearing dresses, you know, where are those fishnets, and I was like, oh my god, I'm, like, I can't let the masculine go, and that's all about power, because I feel, and I'm just realizing this from hearing this conversation, that if I become fully feminine, I will have no power, because, and it's a horrible thing, but, like, within activist circles or anarchist circles, we have not gotten away from patriarchy. I mean, we're trying to, I'm sure everyone is committed to it, but there is somehow this ingrained or internalized sense of, like, men have the power in order to not give up power, or in order to, like, somehow grab onto, to not be kind of lost, or, you know, like, on a really personal level, to not, in interpersonal relationships, feel like somehow I'm going to lose the sense of who I am entirely. Like, that's what I talk, what I mean when I'm talking about power. I'm not talking about I want power over other people. I mean, I'm talking about it in terms of self-empowerment. But I'm shocked that I'm realizing this, that, like, no matter how feminine I try to be, there's a, something in my subconscious that won't let go of performing masculinity on a day-to-day basis, because I feel like I'll be crushed if I do, which is sad.
What do you mean by performing masculinity, and what is that, how does that manifest itself?
Well, like, I'm wearing Carhartts. The, like, ultimate symbol of anarchist masculinity. I don't know. Talking loudly, whatever, like, we can go into what masculinity and what femininity mean, and I think, I mean, I'd like to just collapse those categories all together and live in a gender-free world, but that hasn't happened yet.
I don't really like my gender. I don't want to live in a gender-free world, you know?
I would definitely also want to speak to, I mean, it's helpful, just the hints that you gave of, I'm not trying to examine you too much or anything, but your expression, your performance as masculine, one was wearing Carhartts, which is, I think, is through fashion, I can kind of get to where you were going, but speaking loudly, that one's kind of a, that kind of bums me out, that's a masculine trait in your mind, because that wouldn't be one in mine. In my family, it's, the women are really loud, and that's, the men are kind of a, they kind of end up being quieter ones, so I wouldn't have necessarily put the same association. I think the examination of gender on a self-reflective level always brings up something embarrassing about how we relate to ourselves and what we assume about other people. But we probably have different associations of what masculine and feminine mean, and if you're having any kind of crisis of feeling like if you let something go, you're going to lose part of yourself, that's okay. Think about that's quite possible. Maybe you will lose some part of yourself, you know? Maybe it's the part of yourself that makes those lines. I don't know. I mean, you said you wanted a gender-free world, so...
For yourself.
I'm just playing. I'm sorry. I'm a jerk.
I'm not talking anymore.
I was just going to say, too, that, like, I do understand what you're talking about in relation, like, to what you were saying. I know that a lot of times in activist circles, there's, like, looking at girls who are, like, very girly, or who are femmy, or who, like, play the role of girls, there's, like, a really intense, like, sort of, like, they're just so weak, and they're so this, and they're so that, and, like, if you are playing a girl, like, it must be because you're totally oppressed and have, like, no, you're, like, living in false consciousness, and that's really, really strong, and, like, I think that that has to be dealt with, and to be said, like, you know, that's patriarchy and that's sexism, and like it is, like it's kind of complicated because I think lots of times when someone does play girl, it's because it's like a shitty role to play because we're in a patriarchal society, but that, like, I don't think the solution to that is being like, if you were going to be liberated, then you're not going to play girl anymore and you're going to play boy.
I was just gonna reinforce, like, I really do agree with, like, I don't want to live in a gender-free world. I don't think we should abolish gender. I think gender should, we should put our energies toward making gender a safe thing and something we can play with, or something that could be a choice, or, you know, you can live with what you are. And I really don't like that.
I often wonder, and this is just, like, me wondering, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm really trying to ask, like, questions that are important to me, because I have also been in activist circles for the last 5 years, where I see over and over again activist circles that claim to be anti-hierarchical, anti-patriarchal. Like, that they just have simply appropriated a lot of preconceived, not only gender roles, but what it means to be feminine, what it means to be masculine, so that women through that not only have growing up in a patriarchal society, who are now moving into spaces where they want to be liberated and don't want to play the male role, like, then what is left for them is this feeling of, like, well, then I guess I have to be a woman, as in, like, I have to play these roles out, or sorry, I guess I feel like I'm being inarticulate. Like, how can we challenge the preconceived notions of what is feminine? Why can't short hair be feminine? Why can't wearing Carhartts be feminine? Why can't wearing a skirt be masculine? Like, why is it that we, spend so much time trying to define ourselves within these roles that have been given to us by a patriarchal society? So that's just something like that.
Do you want to wait and then go, or do you want to send her? Do you want to say something now?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I meant by a gender-free world, where we lose our assumptions about what each gender category means. Not that we stop being male or female or masculine or feminine, but that, like, femininity could also mean you're good at math. Like, I was trying to express what you said in a way that I expressed the opposite or was unclear, so...
And then masculinity could also mean having really good child-rearing instincts, like cooking.
I'm really sorry if you felt like I spotlighted you during that, because I feel like this is something everyone in the room sort of feeling, and some people, please. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, I just have a question, and that, well, not a question, but a comment. I just wanted to emphasize, you know, I echo a lot. It's amazing. I think that this is something that women... or any of any gender, all of us. What I'm sensing is that there's a need to have this discussion. What I'm sensing that everybody, regardless of their gender, are having all these issues being presupposed upon them, and we're all struggling with our individual identities against what's coming at us. And, you know, and the, being an Asian woman and being all of that and being with short hair and living in freaking New York City where everybody, most of the people have long hair and always being approached as this, you know, and I already, people assume all sorts of things about me, and it's really interesting how to deal with that. And I echo everything. And I want to echo again just that these struggles or this movement is not necessarily for an individual identity or against an individual identity, but that it is against the government of individuation or the government of identity, presupposed identity upon us. I think that's what we're going to fight for, is that we're going to fight these categories being presupposed that we're supposed to, you know, fit into. And what we should do as every one of you, and I charge this for myself and all of us, is to push those, to charge those categories and create those blurred boundaries. Until we do that, we're not going to break down those categories that, you know, categorize ourselves. And I'm tired of being lumped into some category. It's very powerful. I just think that we should all just push those boundaries and those gendered identities or whatever. We can still choose to have those gendered identities. But after you break those boundaries, you can claim them as your own. But nobody's going to push that at you and tell you what you're supposed to go into. We should be free to... Yeah, that's it.
I'm sorry. I see your hand, but I can just respond real quick, if you don't mind. Thank you. Like, I think one of the things that you talk about pushing gender bound, I think that's really a good point, and I want to connect it to your point. So what's your name?
Oh, my name's Friedel.
Her point is that for me, the new movements must embrace gender fluidity. And the power of movements, the most powerful movements have, you know what I'm saying, in the most powerful times. I mean, you know, this Black Panther brother I know, Jamal, who was one of the Panther 21, he spoke on a video one time about when he first went to the Black Panther office, you know, he was expecting to get a gun, you know what I'm saying, and like go and just start shooting people up and fighting and stuff like that. But the first thing the brother gave him was like, on one hand, a spatula, because he had to fix food for the kids. On the other hand, a diaper, because, you know, after the kids eat, you know what you have to do. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And that type of work is powerful, right? You know what I'm saying? When you're talking about the work of self-determination, that caring work, that work of community, you know what I'm saying? It redetermines gender identity, gender performance. Now, I'm not saying that within the case of the Black Panthers that everything was cool in terms of gender. They had a lot of gender contradictions. But what I'm saying is that within liberation movements, those movements that have been successful have been one, those ones whose work has redefined, their redefinition of work has come out, you know, in terms of their activism. You know what I'm saying? So to me, it's not a question of whether or not, you know, you were in Carhartts or whatever, but the fact is, if you're a woman within an organization, if you're a woman within an organization and they still have you, you know, typing the minutes, you know what I'm saying, and doing the labor work, you know what I'm saying, and the men are still up there like myself speaking, you know what I'm saying? That's an issue, you know what I'm saying? And that, and from that perspective, you can be start having some sort of gender conversation, you know what I'm saying? But I think that's the key right there. So this is my own opinion. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to call this brother over here.
I find your situation fascinating insofar as I'm able to understand it as a historian. That is, yes.
Okay.
And I'm just curious. I know. Pardon me for making this too simple, if I am. But I'm just, in your own personal experience, does sexuality trump race, or does race trump sexuality for you, or is it situational? And the second part of my question or statement was, you know, just about Black liberation struggles and homophobia, you know, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. Right. What about Zimbabwe? Mm-hmm. Robert Mugabe, you know, had he died in 1980, would have been great African liberator.
Right.
He said he's become so homophobic. I just, how do you tie all those things together? Because it just, as somebody that does history for a living, you know, we don't know enough about the Black queer community. And I don't know if it's because historians, we are afraid to deal with it, or if it's a religious motivation. So just a lot of things going on with what you said. So thank you for your talk. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. If I can just, I'll be really brief. First on the second question, I actually went to Zimbabwe in 2000 during the elections, and what they said is true, and it's really connected to state violence on a larger level. You know, saying not only repression against the gay and lesbian community there, but also repression against the political activist community there as well. And it's a contradiction, because what you find out is, again, a lot of the status who came out of the National Liberation Movement really became betrayers of the ideas of national liberation, you know, and in my estimation, began to engage in one-party practices that were all around, like, unliberating. Does that mean, for example, that I would have supported Ian Smith versus Robert Mugabe in 1980? No, I would have supported Robert Mugabe. That process had to take place. But now there has to be another revolution that takes place that overthrows that particular state, you know what I'm saying, that particular entity. And those forces are within society. And if you look at a lot of the new movements within Zimbabwe, I'm using Zimbabwe, but also Namibia as well, you know, they're there. And it's interesting because the South African Constitution really is a liberatory constitution insofar as it does provide rights for gays and lesbians. You know, and that was because of the broadness of the anti-apartheid struggle. So if we look at the idea of a free figurative politic, you know what I'm saying, of what society, what you want to live in, you know what I'm saying, that influences the outcome, you know what I'm saying, of what happens. And I think that's an example within South Africa. You know what I'm saying? Still contradiction in South Africa. However, you know, at least that constitution provides some rights, you know, in some language, you know, to address, you know, the question of gays and lesbians and transgender people. On your second point, For myself, there was, before I came out as gay, I came out as black. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And like, I had, you know what I'm saying? I tell people I'm a recovering Eurocentric. You know, because on a real level, you know, it comes through layers, and really building upon those layers, you know, I had to really, as you mentioned, as a historian, what I had to do was I had to engage in a historical reconstruction of my past. You know what I'm saying? So that required of me to really look back into my past and really think about where was the presence of transgendered and gay people within the African diaspora. You know what I'm saying? And if you look at it, I mean, if you look at, say, for example, I don't know, how many people listen to Miles Davis, the Bitches Brew album? You know, if you remember the cover of Bitches Brew, there's this kind of like women's male figure on the cover. That was done by a Palestinian artist by the name of Abdul Mati. And what he was taking a figure of was the Wahhabi people of the Niger Delta, who are transgendered men, you know what I'm saying, who engage in that practice, you know, openly, you know, in the Niger Delta. So, you know, so when I'm in conversation with my Afrocentric brothers and sisters, they say, there was no homosexuality in Africa. That's a lie. It was all a European invention, you know. I can point to that and say, like, listen, this has been in our presence since, you know, since Lucy, you know, walked the earth. You know what I'm saying? And totally. You know what I'm saying? And I want to talk about this too, because
you can tell she was gay.
Oh, she was so gay. And like, you know, and
what I saw her. I saw her at the Barclays
Bank. Exactly, yeah. You know, Lucy had it, you know? But it's funny too, because like, Ace brought this book in, and I wish, you know, Ace had this great picture. And if you go to the Museum of Natural History, there's a picture of the couple walking, you know, as a man and a woman. You know,
like Neanderthals.
Yeah, Neanderthals. And they're walking, they're holding hands in hand. You know, and the assumption is like, for children, or for whatever, it's like, oh, this is as natural as you can, as it gets. But who's to say, you know, there wasn't a woman, a man, or whatever. Or they even consider themselves that. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's our job as anarchists, and I have to say this, I'm going to say this last thing, I'm going to shut up. And Hilton, you haven't been doing your job. You haven't been keeping me in the bargain, because you've been kind of quiet over there. I'm just kidding. I'm joking. So you don't have to take over from me. Like, I'm not going to say anything. But what I want to say is that I think as anarchists, I think that, or revolutionaries, I think that we really need to study history. Not so much theory, but history. Because it's there. It's there for you. The answers that you brought up and stuff like that is there in the history. People dealt with it. You know what I'm saying? But I think we get so caught up in theory, you know what I'm saying? And so caught up in the eye that we forget that what has transpired in terms of world history. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's important. I think it's there. And I think it's our job to research it, to write about it, and to talk about it. And with that, I'm cool. I'm with you.
And with that, you're in.
Can I have your earring?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken? I know there were some hands, people. Did you still want to say something? I know there were some hands in the back. No? People haven't said anything.
Wow, I get to keep on with it.
Okay, yeah, I have a really quick comment about the coffee thing, which is just to say that...
The what thing?
The coffee thing?
Like, you know, where it's like women need to speak and not make coffee anymore. I think that's really true, but also that, like...
Can you play that for me?
But that it's also a question of, like, what roles are valued. Does that make sense? Where it's, like, it's more important to speak and the jobs of, like, making sure that everyone's taken care of and that, like, all, like, the groundwork is taken care of. And that's a support level, and I think that's what we have to deal with. Like, it's to be like, it's not about that, like, speaking is what's important. Like, everyone needs to speak, and obviously that needs to not be a gender thing. But it's also really fucking important to be like, the work that gets done isn't the, like, ego work, and just taking care of people has to be respected. And that's, like, the whole thing about, like, respecting people who are funny and, like, respecting people who aren't exhibiting, like, strong masculine traits and, the whole atmosphere.
Maybe we should all go make coffee together.
I think the discussion that's been happening in this room is very fascinating and interesting, and I don't mean to derail it, but I'd be interested in hearing what anybody has to say about how patriarchy and gender and sexuality and power play out in as oppressions in the workplace, in our neighborhoods, in our struggles, like, or in labor struggles, in community struggles, like housing struggles, anti-poverty struggles. And I'm just going to leave it very general like that, because those are the movements that I'm involved in, and that's what I'm interested in developing my perspectives on.
What I want to say is, I mean, one thing, when I think about this, you know, I work in a very challenging neighborhood. I work in the South Bronx, you know, and I see the role of, in terms of gender, in terms of patriarchy playing out all the time, in terms of the type of work women have to get and what they have to go through to take care of their children, you know, on a state level, you know, very much so the way in which the time is really monopolized just on this levels of just trying to survive. You know what I'm saying? So these conversations in terms of, like, you know, really gender explorations aren't really there, because they're just trying to just to survive. You know what I'm saying? And not to say that it doesn't come out in different ways as well. One interesting thing, too, I want to talk about, too, is it's like, when you said that, one thing I really want to talk about, and I want us to kind of broaden it out to a larger question, is also the question of children, you know what I'm saying, and how kids are treated within society, and how that's kind of reflected in terms of, like, questions of patriarchy and, like, workplace and stuff like that, too, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, so, like, those are kind of the couple of things that kind of quickly kind of jumped to my mind when you said that. I don't have anything more nuanced to say.
I would say that any is it gone? Any additional identities that people deal with in their struggles make their struggle in some ways more difficult and also more important for them. And I think that, like, fighting for labor movement is important for anybody who has an ounce of compassion for the issues of ecological levels, on socioeconomic levels, on feminism issues, on their own personal politics are protected by having those politics upheld. And I think that for a lot of queer-identified revolutionaries, that's basically the motivation, is that a lot of things need to change, and identifying with one isn't going to do it. And, but at the same time, if somebody wants to, that's their gig. But on a whole, I think it's become a stronger and increasingly stronger movement by having more people going not just to the gay bars, but also going to the protests against the war. And personally, that's a personal analysis. But I think any movement gets stronger with more people who can relate and recognize that they are related to it. I think patriarchy plays into everything, because it's completely upheld within gay society and queer world. I don't feel like patriarchy is queer, so I kind of call it gay society in that, but that was maybe unfair. I should explain that. But patriarchy is everywhere, and I think ways to address it it can be from as fun as you want to as totally as much paperwork as you can do, you know, and everybody's got their methods. I just went on a tour with a band that we called the Stop Interrupting Women Tour. And the draw who goes to the shows that I was playing were, like, punk, like, activists. They were people who already are in. They're already down. But Stop Interrupting Women, you know, we just call it Stop Interrupting Women Tour just because when you see people talking in the show and you're like, you talk. Let a woman have a microphone for a second. And, you know, I mean, it's all within context, but I think that's the point, is that within every context of a movement, there's more you can do to reach the audience that you're addressing. Like, for Kaz in the Bronx, working in the public school system, the Stop Interrupting a Woman Tour would be a different title, but it would work to the same effect, which is to start listening to each other more. And I don't think that there's anything that, there's absolutely nothing in being a feminist that says that you can't love men as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think people often forget, and that gender politics within queer politics we deal with heavily, that as soon as someone chooses to identify as, specifically I think someone who is raised as a gendered female and then identifies as male, the within both their queer world and the surrounding mainstream population, they have to deal with a lot of feminist backlash, it's called,
yeah.
Which is to suggest that by abandoning their gender as a woman, they're not feminist. It's obviously a really complicated and interesting thing to talk about, but I don't know that I'm going to go into all of it right here, but in general, this is shit that's worth discussing.
Can I suggest one couple books? Yeah, I just want to suggest a couple books. I don't know if you read them already, but one is called Dorothy Roberts Killing the Black Body. The other one is by a book on poverty by Frances Fox Piven, and also the work of Ruth Seidel as well. Really does them there. And what you said was kind of reminded me, because there's a group called Sister to Sister, and there's a website, sistertosister.org. And Robin Kelly actually brought this example up of they do work now within mostly people of color communities in Bushwick,
mm-hmm.
where they actually go confront the abuser, you know, in domestic violence cases, you know what I'm saying, and sit down and have dialogue and talk and really, and it's really a powerful step, you know what I'm saying. But I think that one thing that's really interesting that within that, and just talk about sexism and patriarchy, is that now they've been in a situation where their funding has been cut, you know what I'm saying, and their funding has been cut by left-wing foundations, you know what I'm saying. So that says a lot about, you know, the nature of what kind of, you know, once again, a critique of, you know, of what's going on within the society, you know. So yeah, Sister Sister, you should check out their website, sistertosister.org. Yeah, .org.
Oh, another thing I want to throw out there, whether, you know, I don't really care where you stand politically as far as association with voting, but this election, as I think you all are pretty aware of, could make a really big difference for a huge amount of the population, specifically me.
Right.
And Cass.
Yeah.
And you, probably too. And so I just wanted to remind you that it's an important time to pay attention and use your vote, as ridiculous as it sounds. I'm sorry.
And if there's any Canadians with extra rooms around the
room,
yeah. I'd be really interested.
Thanks, though. Please let me get a little closer.
No, right on.
Brooke, were you up for a long time? Sorry, there's somebody back there and I can't tell.
I don't care.
Okay, we're going to go to the back.
Oh, yeah. Hi. As a straight, white, young male, I consider myself kind of part of the less educated, even though I'm from Berkeley. But just something you mentioned real quick back there about how patriarchy functions in the gay community, and I was wondering just if you could elaborate on that a little bit more for my own information.
How patriarchy functions within the gay community functions, I think, the same way class can. And also just because it's a prefabricated scenario. I think that the idea that... I really like, there's a book called Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria that has an analogy of a moving sidewalk that everyone is on, especially white people. I mean, especially the book, it's addressing white people. That's the premise. But so maybe I shouldn't say especially, but that's who the book's about or addressing. There's a moving sidewalk of racism that's already been set up in our country, whether you were raised racist or not. I personally refuse to accept racism as part of my agenda, and in order to refuse it, I can't just stop walking with the thing. I have to walk against it and actively fight a moving sidewalk. That I sort of like the analogy, and I also sort of don't, because there's a suggestion of a moving sidewalk is that it doesn't detour, that there's no possibility of just jamming the fucking thing.
Mm.
But there's also kind of not. I mean, we have a collective mindset that's set, and you can't just jam it on an individual level, on a personal level. It's possible, I think, in certain ways to do that, but I think that it does take work walking against something for a while to get off. And I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure if that's totally my favorite analogy, but I kind of like it. And I would say the same thing is set up for patriarchy in our society, whether someone's gay or not. I mean, you can be on the same
you can be on the have one foot on the elevator on the moving sidewalk that's saying that you're both, hey, look, we're both gay. But I mean, as far as soon as there's the men are still riding, can be just as easily riding on the patriarchy sidewalk. And I'm sorry if that is that analogy just weak? It's kind of weak, or is it? I'm not sure. We can think about another one, but I think that that's important because it's basically just really easy for, as far as I assume, especially within like gayborhoods in different cities,
right.
The men can be the people who harass me on the street, in the gayborhoods, more than I get in other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they either think I'm a young boy, which they like, or they think I'm a dyke, which they don't like. And it's real. That's really where you can find out. I mean, for me, that's how I find out. But basically, just because men still own everything, and there's no women, and there's ever been a president. I mean, you know, like it's so stupid. It's like, what is this 1972? Like, we still have to fucking talk about this. But like, obviously, because patriarchy is so established that people aren't even tripping about it anymore. It's like, what happened? This issue is totally not complete.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Critical Mass a week ago, or I guess during the RNC, and I got attacked by a taxi driver because I was stopping his car. And these bicycle boys who were on my side jumped and started beating this guy up. And I was like, cut it out! Stop it! Stop, stop, stop! And they're like, we're defending you! And I was like, no, you're not! Go away! Stop it! Whoa! Why do I even have to say this? You know, like, why? What? That's not defending me. You're getting mad at someone, and you're letting that me as a woman be an excuse for you to take out your anger on somebody that you hate, which I guess is representing capitalism as a poor fucking taxi man. You know, it gets me heated. I'm sorry. I just started like it's everywhere. It's prevalent. So I think people have to work really hard to fight patriarchy. And pay attention to that, especially within scenes that are claiming to be defending everyone. And that's one reason why I never, until this summer, even slightly identified as an anarchist. Now I guess I do, but it took me a long time because I'm sick of manarchists. I'm totally sick of manarchists.
There's a survey online, actually.
There is.
Are you a
man? Find out if you're a man.
You probably are.
No, I lied.
Oh, yeah. No.
I knew how to answer it.
Do you interrupt women all the time? No.
I like a lot of what you're saying, but I'm sort of going to jump back and bring some of what you're saying to the conversations on gender. Because I mean, I like your analogy of jamming the moving sidewalk. For me, the question of gender is a question of power. And to me, gender is a construct of patriarchy. It's a way of dividing two biological sexes and making them easily distinguishable and making the power dynamic very plain, indisputable, and intractable. And I think that there are parts of us that don't fit in the gender binary, like having a good sense of humor or being a good friend, because I don't think that they threaten that power dynamic. So I think it's useful to think of the things that fall outside of that gender dynamic and then to question why it is that everything couldn't just fall outside of that gender dynamic. Because that's not to say that you can't express yourself in what is traditionally a gender binary right now, or you couldn't express yourself anyway, but I think it's important not to talk about holding on to your gender, because I think people are talking about their gender expression, not about gender as such, because I think gender is an expression of power, and I think we want to not just fuck with it, not reverse it, not run the other direction on the moving sidewalk. I think we actually want to abolish it, and in so doing, still be able to wear high heels or, you know, wear whatever the hell we want, but not have that be associated with power. And I think the only way to do that is to really, really try and get rid of gender and not just play with it.
I have a direct response.
Okay, sorry, and just first, though, we have 5 minutes left. And I know there's four of you there.
Could I just clarify?
Oh, yeah,
because
but just so now
I'm just binary, like, I think that the operative word there was binary, because when I'm speaking about gender, I'm not speaking about male and female, I'm speaking about
like, you know, like, I have a friend who's, like, whose gender identity is, like, nerdy pirate, or, you know, like, which is fucking awesome, you know, but, like, gender, like, I think binary was the operative word, and, like, yeah, we want to, like, throw the binary out the window. I agree with you, but that's...
Mm-hmm. Awesome. This is great. I wish we had, like, 8 more hours, because I just started one more thing.
I just want to also say, real quick, I also think societally, they have created a binary by which men say, you're either a man and you're with us, or you're a woman and you either fall in line and you toe the line that men say, or you're now a feminist and a bad woman. And I also think that in society, and especially in a patriarchal society, that there is a refusal to accept, even chromosomally, a gender that is outside of the binary. And how do those people express what their gender is? Where do they find safe space? So I think that that's another issue, is that there, in nature, there exists, that mm-hmm. this whole idea of binary is completely made up, like, so, and arbitrary. So that's just what I wanted to say.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You've had your hand up for a while.
I'm going to move away from the idea of binary. I just wanted to react to, like, mainstream... a little bit of the mainstream political reference, and how, like, at the same time as you see somebody like Hillary Clinton, where people really love her, really hate her, like, women love her and then they hate her, because it's like, you know, as a woman now, you have the right to have your beliefs, but you're not allowed to be very vocal about them, or you get a lot of resistance. And I still see that in the community that I'm a part of, and I'm assuming a lot of people here probably have that in their communities, where that you can have, like, you can have a very feminist viewpoint, and you can have a certain set of beliefs, but if you're very vocal about them, even people on the left, or even people that are participating in organizing, still feel threatened to a certain extent. I want to see if there's any reaction to that. I guess.
I don't know if we have time for
total
language. Do you want
to just take the last comment?
I'm sure.
This is a great conversation. I wanted to add that it is very much like a matriarchal ideal that there isn't a taboo against going outside of your gender, and mm-hmm. so just the fact that we have to have this conversation is evidence of patriarchy. And, like, getting back to what I do feel is somewhat relevant to the discussion, but we didn't get to touch on it, is like a free love situation, and that's not taboo in a matriarchal system either. And, the opposite, the fact that there's opposites and binaries, like, I was going to say the opposite of patriarchy would be a matriarchal system, and maybe we should look towards that, but that's mm-hmm. binary as well. Mm-hmm. So,
I don't know that anyone agrees with that. I don't, but I don't know if we can.
Let's suggest a couple more books. I'm sorry, I'm more suggesting books, that's why. I haven't read it, obviously, you know, since we're talking about gender binaries and essentialism, Judith Butler's Gender Trouble, Angela Davis' Woman, Race, and Class, Audre Lorde's Sister Outsider, Barbara Smith's Homegirls, you know, saying, so obviously I'm from the second wave feminist movement.
Mm-hmm. Judith Halberstam's Female Masculinity.
Right, yes.
What
yes.
was the name?
Judith Halberstam, Female Masculinity.
Last name?
Halberstam.
Oh,
sorry.
Everybody. And also film,
Born
Late,
Sons
Untied. Okay.